This is Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
All right. What is going on, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and it is good to be back once again for another episode of the podcast of all things Madridismo, all things Madridista, and of course, all things Real Madrid. Of course, that's the most important thing. Now, I didn't do a podcast in the middle of the week, so I'm doing it right now, which is right after, not really right after, the game was yesterday. The game was yesterday against Real Betis. It's holidays right here in America. Well, basically here in the United States, it's Labor Day. So, you know, I had time with the family, decided to jump on the podcast today. So, you know, just want to do a recap of kind of like what everything that happened during the week and whatnot. All the things that were said, all the nutty wildness that comes out of the Spanish press when the team isn't doing as, you know, as well as we would hope it does, you know, and, you know, and then how quickly things turn in football, how quickly things, and especially in Madridismo, and especially in Real Madrid fandom and the world of Madridismo, because we are a very, 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 very fickle group of fans. So what might be one day an absolute end of the world scenario, and an end of the world scenario, mind you, for Real Madrid, is that we started the season and we have drawn two games and won one at the time of before Real Betis, about before yesterday's game of Real Betis. So not that we had lost any games, but that we had failed to win every single game, we had two draws and one win before the game against Real Betis. And of course, everything was riding on this game against Real Betis. Crisis news of crisis was happening all over the Spanish capital, all in the press, all over the world. Everyone was talking about, oh my God, Kylian Mbappe had not scored a goal in three matches. Was it three matches? Yeah, he had not scored a goal in three matches. What are we going to do? What a dud. The world is ending. Real Madrid is finished. It's washed. They are a has-been team. And of course, that's just not how it always works. Now, obviously, I would tell you the truth. Had I done this podcast the day of the game against Las Palmas, which was, I believe, Thursday, which was an absolutely horrendous, dismal display. I was watching it as I do. When I'm at work, I have it open on the side. I can't really pay attention as much to the game, so I'm really just listening to it. Got to catch some of the highlights later. I only catch some sporadic moments. But it was a dismal performance by Real Madrid. And it just was highlighting a lot of the things that we had already talked about and has already been talked about of the performance so far from the team. You know, so before I get into all that, make sure you guys hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, please head over to the YouTube. I mean, please hit that little button that says subscribe, you know, the like button to subscribe, and then the bell to get the notifications. Please help me out there. And then if you are listening, guys, wherever you are listening, hopefully, well, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a comment, leave a rating. That also helps me rise up the ranks there. And if you are following me, we have, of course, the Facebook page, Y Nada Más Podcasts. We have on Twitter. I still call it Twitter because that's what it is, because X is a ridiculous name. So on Twitter or X, it's at Y Nada Más Podcast. So you can find me there. That's where I'm kind of most active. And I think, you know, Real Madrid Twitter is most active. Football Twitter. Football is great on Twitter, essentially, or on X, but it's really Twitter. Of course, on Instagram, we are at YNM Podcast. I post a lot of things on Instagram, but pretty much doing a little bit more write-ups and things like that, because I paid. God, it pains me because, you know, I'm not a big fan of Elon Musk, but it pains me, you know, because you want to grow your business that you have to verify with this guy. And it's, at the end of the day, it's not that expensive to do so. So I verified and I paid him for the blue check mark or whatever. But please do not take that blue check mark about me knowing what the hell I'm talking about. I am just another fan. I am not a pundit. There's still a lot of things that I still want to grow in my analytical mind of, you know, of football. And, you know, so I'm just another guy that's a big fan of the podcast. Sorry, the big fan of Real Madrid, a big fan of football, and just putting my little, you know, throwing my hat into the ring, as they say, to talk about Madrid, to talk about this, to talk about football, to, you know, do it for all the Madridistas out there that might not speak Spanish or might not be as involved in the Spanish media. If you hear my kids in the background screaming, I'm sorry about that, but that's just what happens when they're at home and they're not at sleep, not asleep. It's a day off from school today. They're okay. I guarantee you they're okay. They're yelling, playing Minecraft or whatnot. With that said, guys, let's get into the podcast. With that said, please follow me on all those places. Please help me grow this podcast. I would really appreciate it. I was out for a little bit, but I'm back. I'm trying to focus a lot more on the podcast. It's pretty much myself. Like I said, it's a labor of love. So if you want to write for the podcast or if you want to jump and give your two cents, and you feel you're somebody who's really good at the whole analytical side of the game, obviously you got to be, you know, somewhat vetted. I would say I would probably look you up and figure out who you are first. But if you want to jump on the podcast, you're interested, hey man, hit me up. info@inadamas.net. That is our website, at inadamas.net, www.inadamas.net. But hit us up at info@inadamas.net is the email address, so you can hit us up there and see if you want to jump on at some point, or contact me via Twitter because that's where I'm also most available. Anyway, jumping into the game, I don't want to gloss over what happened against Las Palmas. Las Palmas was a dismal game, but it was a dismal game dismal by Real Madrid standards. You know, it's the same situation. We always suffer with these low block teams, these teams that want to go, you know, and play low block. You know, granted, Las Palmas didn't play like Valladolid did and sit back the entire time. You know, they actually came out and tried to play. They tried to push forward. They scored a goal on us, which was actually a great goal. You know, they, you know, basically caught our defense out. You know, made Molinero, I think was his name, scored a really good, or Moledo scored a good, great goal against us with a quick, you know, some quick footwork to get past and wrong foot Eder Militao and scores, you know, shoots a low ball to the far post of Thibaut Courtois. And it's a very nice goal. So, you know, really we were fighting for the rest of the game. We were fighting back and we end up winning the game via a penalty. And, you know, what else is there to say? There was still, you know, in that game, I was really bothered by a couple of things. Now, I don't remember it as much because what's fresh and top of mind is really the game yesterday against Real Betis. But it was one of those games that, again, has been the midfield is essentially non-existent or just feels like it's completely disconnected. You have one guy, and really the only player that played well in that game against Las Palmas was Fede Valverde. And, you know, Fede Valverde, to build on that and what's being said in the press about Fede Valverde is that he is at current, I would say, the best player on the team, no doubt. Fede is, you know, he took that number eight from Toni Kroos to heart in the sense of being, in a lot of ways, because there are many leaders on the team, being, of course, Modric and Kroos being the two, I would say, the two biggest leaders, in addition to maybe the likes of Dani Carvajal. But when it comes to the way they are as, to the way they kind of command respect, I would say Toni Kroos is a lot of huge shoes to fill in that regard. And Fede Valverde really took that to heart and has put this team on his shoulder. Now, obviously, he is not the same player as Toni Kroos. I don't think he ever will be the same player as Toni Kroos, because that's just impossible. That's a reason that Toni Kroos is a once-in-a-lifetime type of midfielder. But not because Fede Valverde isn't an incredible player in his own right. It's just they are two different styles of players. Fede Valverde is just a work, just an insane workaholic on the pitch. He is a machine that, you know, you're real true out-and-out box-to-box midfielder. He will come down and defend. He will go up. He does an amazing job of progressing the ball forward. He tries to make plays. He's shooting outside of the box. He's trying to get into the box. He's trying to go out right and combine with Dani Carvajal that's coming up on the right-hand side of the pitch. He's trying to do that. He's trying to swing crosses into the box. He's trying to do 1-2 passes, trying to do what he can to find his teammates in order to get a goal. If not, he's trying to shoot from outside the box. If not now, he's trying to take free kicks, and was scored the one the other day. And it seems like, from the things I've heard in the Spanish media and then from, you know, other media, of course, really it's Carlo Ancelotti that's telling Fede Valverde to really take a step up and not be afraid to shoot, not be shy, and to go for it. And I think that is one of the things that we're going to see really this season, where I think Fede Valverde is going to have an opportunity to really score some goals if he continues to do that. And he's just getting better and better at really not only his strength, of course, at striking the ball with the tremendous power he has, but the accuracy has only gotten better. You know, for many seasons, he was hitting the post or skying it over slightly, but it was still always very close to doing it. It's such a strong shot, and I believe that he has the ability to score those more often. And then from a set-piece perspective, he's right in front of the goal. You know, he has the ability to shoot, you know, a low-driven shot through the defenders and towards a goalkeeper that obviously might block it, but it might spill into, you know, I doubt he's going to be able to catch it. It could spill into one of our oncoming forwards or other players that are in the box, and we can score that way as well. So I think we're going to see more of that. So Fede Valverde, obviously the star of that game against Las Palmas, was really the only one that I think was salvageable against Las Palmas. Now, a lot of things came out of that game of Las Palmas. Obviously we put in Brahim instead of Rodrigo. We put in Arda Güler instead of who was it that was not there for that game? So it was Fede Valverde, Tchouaméni, and Arda Güler. So Arda Güler steps in. Obviously, Jude Bellingham is out. So basically, that was who we had step in for Arda Güler. I mean, sorry, for Jude Bellingham. Arda Güler is a fantastic player. I want to see him more often. Obviously, I think he's better suited being on the right-hand side of the pitch than he is suited being, you know, on the right-hand side of the pitch or in the middle of the pitch. So playing that sort of number 10 role, he's much better at that side of the game than he is, let's say, playing as a out-and-out center midfielder. You know, he's not your box-to-box type. He's not the type of player I think that's going to set the pace of the game a la Toni Kroos. I really think you don't have, you know, I was talking with somebody earlier about who can really take the mantle from Toni Kroos in this team. And the thing is, the question is really who can take the mantle from Toni Kroos in any team. I mean, essentially in world football at the moment, is there a Toni Kroos out there? And I would say you have players that have that ability to move the ball and that ability to, you know, create openings and have these really pinpoint passes. You know, the likes of somebody like Kevin De Bruyne. I would say Florian Wirtz is a great player as well, who can do that. Joshua Kimmich. But all of them are different in their style of play, especially, let's say, like Florian Wirtz is a much more attacking midfielder. Obviously, you guys might hate on me for this, but I'm, you know, being the fact that my family's from Colombia and I'm Colombian, you know, I always felt that James Rodriguez was kind of that type of player as well, that can, you know, just has amazing ability to put passes wherever he wants. But the problem with James Rodriguez is that he's just not good at defending ever. He's not somebody that's going to drop back. He's not somebody that's going to fight for the ball when he doesn't have it. And so that was, you know, that's very different than Toni Kroos. Much more attacking mindset. Obviously, he's matured with time and he can set the tone. He can set the pace. Because really, when Colombia plays and the reason they've done so well in the past, you know, few months, essentially going on a win streak of 22 odd games before losing to Argentina in the final. It really is James that is always the one that sets the pace of the team and organizes the team. Once James is off the pitch, Colombia is a completely different team, and they sort of lose that stability. Quintero, Juan Fernando Quintero, who now plays for Racing in Argentina, has a similar profile, but not obviously to the level that James Rodriguez has. James has matured, and he's going to do well, and I'm so happy to see that he's going to Rayo Vallecano. But going back to the argument, you know, of players like Cross, there's very few that can take that up. Like I said, Florian, Joshua Kimmich, De Bruyne is really the one that's closest, maybe a Gundogan, but it's just nowhere near that level, you know? That's the reason he is who he is, you know? And so replacing him is going to be incredibly difficult. It's not Arda Güler. I would say, you know, we saw against Betis having a more true center midfielder like Dani Ceballos that, you know, stands on that left-hand side of the pitch, where Toni Kroos stood, you know, was really, you could see, was a lot more balanced, you know, a lot more balanced in that regard. Jude Bellingham plays that role and is a center midfielder, but, you know, with how he's been playing and kind of who he is more of that guy. He's kind of like another Valverde, where he's going to go into the box. He is going to try and be that. And as Ancelotti kind of had him, was that guy who was making those late runs into the box to possibly score using his height, using his body, setting up plays, you know, using his dribbling skills to open up opportunities for his teammates. So he's very different than, let's say, Toni Kroos, because Toni Kroos is always kind of the... Toni Kroos was just the man, you know, and I think some, you know, as much as people love, you know, as much as people like to talk about Ballon d'Or and scoring goals and, of course, all the trickery and the tricks and the skills and calling players ballers because of what they can do with the ball, but, you know, in the Jogo Bonito and all of that kind of stuff, those flashy players. The thing is, those guys that are really not flashy but do the things inside the game that are so correctly. And the thing is, I guess since I'm older now, you know, those are the things that I start looking at, and you just see somebody doing things that are like, you know, things that really are what help the team in the long run or really help the team the most. Because all that flashiness with the ball and being, you know, a prolific goal scorer is great, but you need to have a connection between your defense and your offense. And those guys are the ones who really do the dirty work. You know, obviously, Casemiro, who unfortunately, you know, had a terrible, terrible weekend with Manchester United, and it just seems like a shell of his former self. But it's because he's being asked to essentially almost do like a Toni Kroos role at Manchester United, when that's not what he does. You know, he is that quote-unquote destroyer. He is that guy that's there to be a defensive player and essentially get rid of the ball quickly to somebody next to him that will progress the ball forward. He is not that guy. And he doesn't have that at Manchester United. You know, he doesn't have those players around him with that ability. And so Toni Kroos was that guy that just did a lot of that dirty work, would go and defend when he needed to defend, when he had the ball, was always looking for the correct pass, whether it was on the complete other side of the field, a pinpoint ball that would change basically the line of attack, either from left to right, you know, so cross field passes. You just can't, I don't see anybody that has that ability. You know, even Luka Modric in his last two appearances, even coming on yesterday against Real Betis, his first half of against Las Palmas, just giving away a lot of balls, giving away the possession, making errant passes, things that we didn't see from Luka Modric before. And that's got to come with age. That's got to come with timing. It also has to come with the fact that he's not playing as much as he used to. He's also playing with, I think, a front line that at this moment is very erratic because they're all moving all the time in different directions, and they still kind of haven't understood which is their movement. So that was what we were saying in that game. It was just, it just seemed like everything that we were saying, that they were going to grow into the game, that they were going to continuously get better, was only getting worse. And, you know, kind of to play on that. So the game against Las Palmas, yes, terrible game. Everything, all the chatter that comes after the Las Palmas game, regardless, it's a 1-1 draw, okay? So it's a 1-1 draw. Real Madrid still hasn't lost a game. You know, obviously we've dropped, we have dropped 4 points. So at that point, you know, we're talking about before the Real Betis game, right? So at that point, we only had 5 points out of a possible 9. Now, it's the first 3 games of the season, hardly the end of the world, but it is a cause for concern, considering this is Real Madrid, considering this is the team that won the Champions League, the team that won La Liga, the team that is supposed to be, you know, now chock full of stars. But you lost, and there's no way of, you know, sugarcoating it. You lost a huge player in Toni Kroos that offers so much. But even without him, this team really should be playing better. And I think it just, yes, I do believe that it's going to take time, and it's not so, but the, you know, Spanish press and Madridistas as a whole just have no patience for anything. So 2 draws and 1 win in the first 3 games of the season automatically makes everything a crisis. The hashtags already come out for Carlo Ancelotti, the people who dislike Carlo Ancelotti for whatever strange and idiotic reason that I just can't understand how you continue to say, like, I've seen people say he's an overrated coach, one of the most overrated coaches in all of history. This guy who has won all the titles that you can possibly win as a coach, he has won it, you know? And so to say that he has no tactics is obviously he has tactics. Obviously he knows how to play the game. Obviously he knows how to see the game better than some Twitter warrior guy, some Twitter warrior with, I don't know, 300,000 plus followers that are probably just as insane as he is. Because to badmouth a coach, one thing is that he's not fitting the system anymore, or other teams are already starting to get, you know, get hip to say it one way, to get hip to his style of play or to Real Madrid's style of play, which in a lot of ways we are a predictable team, because the idea is we're going to use our speed, whether it's Rodrigo or Vinicius, we're going to use the speed up the flanks, you know, balls over the top, trying to get Vinicius and Rodrigo that ability to, you know, to basically get a one-on-one situation with the goalkeeper, or for both of them to get into running inside of the box into the final third and finding a ball, finding someone that's making a run, a late run, in order to score a goal or to cross it to Vinicius, who's making a run. Now, before, it was also, we needed some sort of physical number nine in the box, which currently we don't have. So that ability, that option of having somebody in the box to, you know, score a header doesn't exist. Even though, you know, Mbappe isn't a small guy. I think he's what, like 6'1" or 6 foot straight up, you know? So he's not a small guy. I mean, he's not known for his aerial prowess, you know? But I mean, obviously there's still an option there for him to do it as this team's number nine, but you know, that just seems like it's less of the options now, as both him and Vinicius still continue to drift wide to the left a little bit. But in this game against Betis, there was one moment of play where those runs that Mbappe can make, that change of pace that he has to make a diagonal run, all of a sudden, when he feels like Carvajal, who this in this game was, in this game against Betis, now moving into the Betis game, in this game against Betis was a lot more active, you know, going up the flank and trying to be an attacking outlet than he was, let's say, against Las Palmas. Well, because in Las Palmas, we started with Lucas Vázquez, who I really think, you know, as good as Lucas Vázquez is, his attitude, his ability to fight, his technique isn't at the same level, in my opinion, as, of course, or in many people's opinion, of course, as Carvajal. And Carvajal offers you a lot more, I think, stability when he goes forward, and as well as, you know, defensively. So he pushed up more and was able to make those runs into you know, on the right flank and then try to get the ball in to the box into, let's say, a Rodrigo that was in the box that had made a run into the box, or in this case, a Kylian Mbappe who makes a darting diagonal run all the way across the goal in order to meet Carvajal's pass and misses the ball, obviously, to score. But you could already see that is the type of stuff that this guy is going to bring to the table. It's just that ability to make those incredibly fast runs, catch everyone by surprise, and get into that position. And then before you know it, he's got a foot on the ball and the ball is in the back of the net. The guy just knows how to do it. It's just that ball, the goals weren't falling to him. So before this game, a lot of things had been said after Las Palmas, of course, right before Betis. Vini and Mbappe are not gelling. They're not getting along. All this kind of stuff. They're not talking to each other. They have issues. There's issues in the locker room, which I don't know where people get it from. You know, I don't know where people get it from. Obviously, these guys say they have connections in the dressing room, and there's leaks and whatnot, and all of this stuff fuels the fire, because this is what Spanish press, and then I think also the English media as well, and by English I mean the football media in Great Britain. They love this, or in England, they love this kind of drama. They want the drama. They want the behind-the-scenes juiciness. What's going on in that dressing room? Do these guys really get along? Do they not get along? Are egos clashing? What's going on? Why are they not figuring each other out? But if you really look at the last few games of Real Madrid, it has been a consistent story of the players trying to help Mbappe get his first goal, because they know that if Mbappe gets his first goal, that's going to lift. And you could totally feel it in this game against Real Betis, this feeling that Mbappe had that he needed to get this monkey off of his back. You know, the monkey off of his back being this feeling that I can't score, I can't score, I can't score. La Liga, in La Liga, I haven't been able to get my opening goal. And as he said later on in an interview, it's for him to go three games without a goal was something that doesn't normally happen to somebody of his level, right? So he's worried. I'm pretty sure he's not worried, but I think he's feeling the pressure. You could tell there was, even the Chiringuito said it, there was this, and we know how it is, as Madridistas, you should know how it is. There is a rumbling behind the scenes. They better do good today. This, a lot was riding on this Real Betis game, because it's Real Betis, which, obviously not world beaters, but one of the better clubs in La Liga, consistently usually in the top 10, top 5, top 6, have played in the Europa League, have some talented players on the team, although they just lost Nabil Fekir. But they're a consistent team. When it comes right now to Sevilla, they're the better team than Sevilla at the moment, and have been for the last two or three seasons. So not an easy team. They've surprised us in the Bernabeu before. They've surprised us when we've gone to their stadium, which slips my mind, to the Benito Villamarín. So not an easy team. And of course, we had already struggled against Las Palmas. We struggled against Mallorca. We even struggled against Valladolid in our own stadium, a team that Barcelona, to bring them up, had just utterly destroyed 7-0, So a lot of eyes were on, can Real Madrid come good against Betis? And that was the feeling that was going on. It was heavy. It was heavy on me. I could even feel it all the way thousands and thousands and thousands of miles from the Bernabeu. I could feel it, that I was nervous for this game, because I knew there is no possible way that we can be going to an international break 7 points adrift of Barcelona, especially a Barcelona that, even though I feel like the other shoe is going to drop, they have injuries themselves. They have players that are going through a purple patch. They're young kids. But as the season goes on and things get grueling and more grueling and more grueling and more grueling, you have to see if those players, being how young they are going to have the mental fortitude and the experience to deal with that kind of stuff. I do feel like the other shoe is going to drop, so they can celebrate all they want right now, but I don't think that that's going to be their, you know, that I do feel like that's going to be their Achilles heel. And Real Madrid is going to continue to grow into the team that has the experience, knows how to play throughout the season, play in multiple different tournaments at the same time, has the depth to do so. Although we lost Ceballos today for a couple of months, or it seems like, or a couple of weeks. We lost Mendy as well. We already lost Jude Bellingham, although he put up a cryptic tweet that said September 5th he'll be back, I guess. Or that he's going to play September 5th. I don't know what that tweet was about, but I guess it means that he's kind of going to start, probably going to be back after the international break. Camavinga hopefully will be back soon, and then, you know, we can get those guys back into the mix. But yeah, the rumbling was there. The fear was there of, you know, just, and not because, and the crazy thing is, it's not because, not to say that losing against Real Betis wouldn't be bad. It would absolutely be horrid if we lost against Real Betis and we're 7 points behind Barcelona. But it's still so early in the season, that you can't say, that you just can't say that that was, that this would be the absolute be all and end all of the rest of the league. You know, it's just too early right now for that to happen. But even then, right now, there would be so much insanity with everything that's going on right now if this team did not happen to win. So there was a lot of pressure on these guys. Vinicius, with his crazy dreadlocks and all that kind of stuff, you know, decides to cut his hair. I think there's a lot of, you know, I thought somebody brought it up really well, that it's kind of every time Vinicius has played with those like wild haircuts, things don't ever go well with him. So it just seems like he's got it, you know, he's growing up, man. You know, you're getting grown, and you just need to leave all that stuff aside and focus on the football, because I think that's the one thing that a lot of us have an issue. Not to say a love and hate relationship, because I absolutely love Vinny, and I hate the fact that Spanish press kind of was trying to make him the scapegoat for the reason that the team wasn't functioning. And that's just another unfortunate side effect of what's going on in Spain, in the sense of, you know, the fact that Vinicius, yeah, because Vinicius likes to talk. He likes to, you know, showboat. He likes to, you know, rile up the crowd and everything like that. All of a sudden, you know, he's the bad guy, and to consistently victimize this guy, even though there are legitimate gripes that he has, because there is racism in Spain, and like really shitty racism in Spain that is geared to this guy on a consistent basis. And it's one thing, and here's just like my little tangent, but it's one thing to call somebody a punk, or to say, you know, you suck, or to stick up your middle finger at them even, or to drop an F-bomb at them when they're running by you and all that kind of stuff. Okay, not the greatest behavior in the world. I think you're still kind of an idiot, because, you know, you're a fan, and why are you yelling that? Why do people lose their mind in a stadium like that? At the end of the day, you're paying money to go, and why would you, you know, just lose your mind like that? But I don't know, you know, that's a whole other psychology of sports and trying to understand why fans lose their minds over this shit. But anyway, and I do too, but I don't think I would ever badmouth a player regardless of what team they played on. Maybe Barcelona, but I wouldn't still resort to cussing out their mothers and, you know, I don't know, saying all sorts of shit. And then so that is one side of things, to like basically badmouth somebody. But if you have to resort to racist, you know, if you have to resort to racist words and epithets and all this kind of stuff, and say things to people and use that type of, you know, use that type of hate speech, let's say, then you are probably a racist, and you are probably have a lot of other problems to deal with, you know, because you are, well, you know, I'm just going to say, you are a scumbag. That's kind of what it is, man. You know, you that There's no reason to take it to that level. You know, there is no justification to take it for that level. So Vinny Jr. has a legitimate gripe against some of the fan bases in La Liga and the things they have said to him regardless. And it's probably, yeah, because he likes to showboat and he likes to talk trash and he likes to get in people's face. And so, yeah, it's warranted that you can say stuff to him or yell at him if you want. But to take it to the next level and start being racist against him simply because of the color of his skin is already where you are exceeding and crossing a line. So with that said, he's got legitimate gripes. And anyway, and so he's become sort of this, the media was trying to make him this scapegoat for the issues that were going on with Real Madrid and them not gelling. And then starting to say all these things about them not getting along in the dressing room, which was absolute bullshit. Because everything we've seen, they totally get along. And it's just about two guys who have never played with one another, have been playing and plying their trade in two completely different leagues, finally coming together, both of them being stars in the world of football, arguably two of the best in the world, by their own admission, two of the best in the world, which I think I'm going to play that in a little bit. But they are the, you know, saying that they're two of the best in the world so that they're used to this kind of criticism. They're learning to play with one another. They're learning to understand one another. So that is what has been going on. And it's not because, you know, he doesn't want to pass them, but the problem is there's pressure on both of them. There's pressure to score. They were already coming off. They were already coming off a draw against Mallorca. They were coming off a so-and-so performance, although we, in the end, the scoreline reflected more than a so-and-so performance against Valladolid. But in Las Palmas, they were struggling. They were down. They were down 1-0. So, you know, Vinicius takes it upon himself to try to be the guy who scores the goals. A couple times doesn't pass it to Mbappé. Mbappé gets a little bit obviously frustrated that there could have been a better option or he was the better option. Those type of things happen on the pitch, you know, but everyone making it out to be like, he's the one who doesn't want to play with Mbappé. He doesn't want to play with Mbappé. Vinicius is being selfish. He's the guy who's going to ruin everything. When everything that I have seen has been consistently the Vinicius trying one time and time again to give the ball to Mbappé. Is he going to make mistakes? And am I going to get on him for making mistakes? Sure. Losing his cool and, you know, starting to gesture to the crowd when he's getting pulled off the bench? Yes. Have I thought, you know, and you know, here's another thing. Have I thought that I want to see at some point maybe give, you know, one of these two guys a rest, whether it's Mbappé or Vinicius? Do I want to see at some point an Endrick in the middle, an Mbappé on the left and a Rodrigo on the right, or an Arda Güler on the right? Do I want to see that kind of setup at some point? Sure, because Endrick is more of that out and out number nine. He's already shown in two games now that every time you put him in every time you put him in, he immediately has or finds a way to get a shot on goal or to become a goal threat. He did it against Valladolid and scores. He did it against Las Palmas, didn't score. And he did it again yesterday against Real Betis, almost scored as well. This guy is a threat and he can be a threat. But the thing is, how do you balance having somebody like Endrick with the likes, of course, with Vinicius, Mbappé and Rodrigo? But it's the beginning of the season. As the season goes on, there's either going to be injuries, God forbid they're not long ones, or knocks. Let's just call them knocks, not injuries, not long-term injuries. Or minutes that, you know, you want to preserve guys like Rodrigo and Vinicius or Mbappé. So you have that ability to have Endrick there. And I want to see more of that because I think that kid is definitely showing me that he has so much potential and that he is so hungry to score. So that is my opinion with that. So I wanted to play something real quick. And this is from the other day from Mbappé's, after the game, they interview him. Now, this is just the audio. There's a picture of Mbappé on the screen for those of you that are watching the video. So it's just the audio. It's in Spanish. I'll translate it right after. It's a couple things that he says that I think are really important.
Muy tranquilo. Yo no soy de España, so no escucho mucho lo que pasa, pero yo sé que muchas personas me dicen que la gente habla de mí, de Vini. Pasa nada, es normal, porque somos dos jugadores famosos, jugadores que son los mejores del mundo. Es normal que la gente habla, pero ahora somos en la etapa que conocemos mejor.
So right there, he's saying that, you know, he's not Spanish, that, but he knows that people have told him that, you know, in the press, they're talking about him and Vinicius. And he says, it's normal. It's normal. We're two very famous players. So this is where I like it. He's channeling his inner CR7. He says, you know, we're two very famous players that happen to be two of the best in the world. Or he might have said the two best in the world, which, you know, makes it even a little bit more of a punch for the haters out there that want to talk about arrogance. But it's not arrogance when you back it up, guys. It's not arrogance when you can back it up, guys. And Kylian Mbappe and Vinicius definitely can back it up with titles and goals and whatnot. So let's see. And he says, obviously, that they're working together in order that things are going well and that they're working together in order to improve their connection.
Intento a ver cómo su movimiento, cómo juega bien. Conozco el jugador, pero no conozco todo su movimiento, lo que gusta o no.
So right there, he's saying, I'm trying to get used to more of his movements. I'm trying to get used to the way he plays. He goes, I know him as a player, but I don't know all of his movements. And I don't know, basically, yeah, just saying that he knows how good, talented Vinicius is. He knows how he is as a player. But he doesn't know all of his movements. He's not used to all of his movements yet. So he's trying to figure out how to make him play better or what positions he likes to play better in. That's like a better idea of what he's trying to say there.
Normal, somos los gustos, pero que la gente habla de nosotros es normal, pero nosotros tenemos que ser tranquilos y ahora somos lo más importante es Real Madrid.
So he says the most important thing there is, basically he's saying the most important thing, that it's normal that people talk about them because that's just something that comes with football. But at the same time, they have to remain calm because at the end of the day, the most important thing is, of course, that they play for Real Madrid. And, you know, just, you know, a really, really well thought out response, that at the end of the day, I think was just perfectly put. You know, he said it perfectly. He said it, you know, that is essentially what you know is going on. You know, like as we were talking about them getting to understand each other. Yes, they are two fantastic players, and he says it, and he even recognizes it. They are two fantastic players. He knows that Vinicius is great, but he's not at the same right now. He doesn't know all of Vinicius's movements. He doesn't know which way of them playing together is going to, let's say, improve him. Help Vinicius play better, and then also by chance Vinicius understanding Mbappe's movement to help him play better. So those are the things that need to happen. And then of course, you know, he slides it in there. People are going to talk because we are two very, very famous guys and two of the best players in the world. I don't know if he said of. I think he said we're the two best players in the world. Which, hey, man, yeah, let it be. Just bring it out. Bring it out, man. Just, you know, channel that inner CR7 and get the haters talking because the haters are going to talk regardless. They're going to talk regardless of what he said. Pablo Fernandes comes out. No, obviously, he's not the best. Pablo Fernandes from Von Betis gets interviewed and he says, you know, I guess they're drilling him with a lot of questions about Kylian and he didn't want to talk about Kylian, I guess. They had just suffered a loss. So he says, you know, because how do you deal with a player who's so good at everything? And he goes, well, he's not as good as at everything. If he was as good as everybody thought he was, he would have scored in the first three games. So there you go. You know, a little thing, a little pinch there. And the haters want to talk. They're going to talk regardless, man. They're going to talk regardless. As the old saying goes, you know, a lion or a tiger, however you want to say it, can't concern itself with the opinion of sheep. Because at the end of the day, who eats the sheep? It's the lion, it's the tiger. Vinicius and Mbappe are the tigers. Rodrigo as well. You know, Jude Bellingham as well. They can't concern themselves with what a lot of other people want to just start throwing in their direction, which I think is, of course, a concerted effort by Spanish press, anti-Madridistas, and even some Madridistas to throw things into the mix because they want to create some sort of drama. In this day and age, with the world of Twitter, with the world of, and I'm still calling it Twitter, the world of Twitter, which you're getting money and you're getting engagement gets you money. Engagement causes you to get likes and all sorts of stuff like that, and then can also end up, you know, lining your pockets. Engagement harvesting and being being facetious and starting drama or controversy for the sake of starting drama or controversy gets you money. It makes you money. It gets clicks. It's what people want, you know? So that is what people want to do. They want to start. And that's what these places like El Chiringuito and all these people do. Now, we listen to them because at the same time, yeah, they probably do have connections and they're in Madrid and they know people in the club. And the club also filters things out to them or, you know, leaks things out to them so that they'll explain it and all that kind of stuff about what's going on behind the scenes. All that kind of stuff really does happen. But and so that's why we watch, and that's why we want to listen and hear that kind of drama of what's going on behind the scenes. Not maybe not even drama. We want to know what happens with our favorite players in the world, you know? But it is controversy to start controversy. So they know that that's going to happen, and they know that people are going to talk, and they know that people are going to say all these kinds of things about them that they're not getting along in order to drive a wedge in what has, at least for the past 2-3 seasons, maybe more, been a very united dressing room, especially under a man like Carlo Ancelotti, who is an incredible man manager. Maybe not the best tactician in the world, but a great man manager who knows how to get these players playing to in a way that everybody is going to just give their absolute best. And no matter if they're down on the score sheet, they're going to continue to win. So how can you be a Madridista and hate a Carlo Ancelotti and continue to talk trash on a Carlo Ancelotti who has delivered a 15th La Liga title, has delivered a 15th Champions League title, a 36th La Liga title? How can you people hate on this guy simply because he didn't win? We didn't get a positive result in the first two games of the season. Not an entirely negative result. Not an entirely negative result, mind you, because we still haven't lost a game. And while it's not up to the standards of what we all expect from Real Madrid, it's still not the end of the world. And it's happened before, and he said it many times before, that you have to learn how to suffer in football. Losing, dropping points, getting draws, or pinchazos, as they say in Spain. Those type of things happen in football. It doesn't matter whether you're a Real Madrid, it doesn't matter you're Manchester City, or you're Barcelona, or any of these other teams that, you know, were once synonymous with graces. I say once because Barcelona isn't synonymous with greatness anymore. And that's a dig, yes. But with that said, you can't do that. You know, you can't just, you know, you can't believe that they're going to win absolutely everything. That is our hope. That is our dream. That is what we want as fans. But honestly, as a podcast, I tell you right now, it would be freaking boring, to not say another word. It would be incredibly boring if we won every single game 6-0, 5-0, 7-0. We're just destroying everybody. Everybody was doing really well in the dressing room. Everybody loved each other. There was absolutely no controversy. There was absolutely no drama. There was no news coming out of there. We wouldn't have anything to talk about. Because victories don't always make you happy. Victories don't generate clicks. Victories don't get drama all the time. Consistently winning doesn't make drama all the time. But the great thing about Madrid is that it does cause people to hate you. And the hate watching drives an awesome narrative, because what it is they want us to lose so bad. And when we don't lose, that's when the things are going to come out of Real Madrid no juega nada. Real Madrid doesn't know what they're playing at. They don't have a specific style. They don't know how to play. Our style is beautiful. Our style is amazing. Dynamic, vertical football. It's dynamic, amazing football. We play the best football in the world. Some amazing possession, but we lose 3-0 at the end because, you know, the other team, it doesn't play as nice as that. They just want to score goals, you know. But we're not just about scoring goals. We're about beautiful football. And even if we lose, I'm proud of my team because we played beautiful football. Even if we lost 5-0 and haven't been able to win a Champions League in God knows how long. So anyway, Real Madrid always finds a way to win, and that's kind of what I like. I like it, you know, and maybe that's an American mindset. An American mindset back into that, you know, let's puff out our chest, American bravado, Fast and the Furious, Vin Diesel, you know. It doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, winning is winning, you know. Ricky Bobby from Talladega Nights saying, if you ain't first, you last, you know. That's very much so the American way. So it's very much so an American mindset in the sense that Real Madrid is a team that kind of goes with that sort of mind, that mentality where we don't care about how we play the game if every single game, I mean, if we're able to string together some amazing passes and play some beautiful football because the other team is allowing us to do that, we will do it and we will score on you. But if you're going to sit back and we have to grind a win out, we're going to grind a win out. And if we, because you're a really good team, like a Manchester City was last year in the Champions League, if you're a really solid team and we decide that the only way we can win this game is by playing defensively and being really smart in how we play the game, we're going to do that too. Because at the end of the day, the way to win the game is by getting more goals than the opposition. So we will do whatever it takes to win. And some people seem to have a problem with that. Now, I understand that I understand that football is the beautiful game. I understand it is all about entertainment. But sometimes, at the end of the day, the money that comes in for the squad, the money that is on the paychecks, the money that pours in from winning championships and all that kind of stuff has nothing to do with how pretty your football was. It has everything to do with how you with winning and losing, black and white. There is no gray area there. So no one's going to remember the team that played beautifully but came in second. No one's going to remember the team that played beautifully and got eliminated in the group stage or in the round of 16 or in this upcoming Champions League, the league stage. No one's going to remember those guys. You have to find how to win. And yes, that might be a very American mentality. That might be a very against the grain of the beautiful football mentality that so many Barcelona culés want to have, which is we play pretty football, we play beautiful football, we play the prettiest football on earth. But at the end of the day, they have stuff to show for it, but they're lagging behind another team that might not always play the most beautiful football in the world, but knows how to win. And at the end of the day, we live in a world where that, especially in football and in sports, what matters is the score at the end of the day. Now, if this was like an Olympic sport where you also got style points and difficulty points like gymnastics for how beautiful you did a back heel pass or a croqueta or, you know, a kick up or whatever it is, or scored a volley, then they might have something to compete with us with. But that's not how football is measured. Football is measured by who puts the ball in the back of the net, who puts the ball in the back of the net the most times. And Real Madrid will continue to do that, and we'll continue to improve. And we have the players to put the ball into the back of the net in a large number. And now, hear me out. Now that Mbappe has got his first two goals of the season, and this, like I said, this weight has been lifted off his shoulders. He's kind of can set back up. He can ease up a little bit. Vinicius can also kind of, like, the whole team doesn't have to feel like, okay, we have to make sure Mbappe scores now. They can all play together. They can play strong. So I think this international break at this time is going to do a world of good for Real Madrid. And we are going to come out guns blazing when the games return, which let me check. When's the next game, guys? I'm sorry if I don't. When is the next game for Real Madrid? The next game for Real Madrid is Real Sociedad. So the next game for Real Madrid, we play Real Sociedad on September 14th. Saturday is September 15th. And then we also have start the Champions League, our Champions League run, which our first team will be up against VfB Stuttgart. Is that however you say that? Stuttgart. I've always loved German and wanted to learn it, but it's such a difficult language. So I started learning Italian instead because I love Napoli and that's my other favorite team, who did great this weekend, by the way. Serie A, they're doing good. They started improving, definitely improving. And now they have Lukaku, you know, and I like Lukaku. You know, I think he's just sometimes, you know, he misses wide open sitters, but you know, what can you do? I'd rather have Osimhen, but Osimhen is losing his mind. Anyway, so, and decided to go somewhere else. And I think he's going to like Galatasaray now or something. I have no idea. But Napoli's looking solid, so I'm happy about that. That's just my Serie A update because that's the other team I happen to follow and love because I love Italian football. I love the Italian culture. I already speak Spanish, so I can, you know, follow everything that's on going on in Spain. But I also love Serie A. I also love La Cultura Italiana. You know, I love them. I love it. I love il calcio italiano. So anyway, with that said, guys, that is my podcast for today. I think I went in every little bit of directions here, but hey, guys, I'm starting to do some more stuff now. I updated the music, the background music for my podcast. I've always been I'm a big hip hop head, man. I grew up in the early 90s, Wu-Tang Clan, Mobb Deep, all those kind of things. New York style hip hop, East Coast. That was always my thing. So I am a big hip hop head. You're always going to hear hip hop, funk, that kind of stuff on this podcast. And so this is my new outro music for the podcast. And in addition, I always have the music, you know, at the beginning of the podcast. It's always very important to me that it kind of reflects the feeling that I'm in. All right, guys, with that said, we've reached the end of the podcast. Please remember to subscribe. Hit that subscribe button, ladies and gentlemen, on YouTube. If you're watching YouTube, please hit the subscribe button and, you know, you get all the updates of when I post. I'm doing this one a week, guys. That's my commitment. I can't do it in the week, during the week, because, you know, obviously I'm working and I have children and I have a wife. And if I want to stay married, I have to make sure that I do all those things. With that said, unless you guys want to help me, info@inadamas.net, shoot me a message so that you can do some write-ups and maybe jump on the podcast. That'll help me out a lot. What else did I have to say? Yeah, hit the subscribe button. Also, if you're listening, please, guys, leave a rating, leave a like, leave a comment, whatever, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, because that helps me rise up the ranks. Send me a DM at Inadamas Podcast on X/Twitter. Send me a DM at YNM Podcast on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook at Inadamas Podcast. Although Facebook, I don't know, it's just kind of dead, but we got quite a few followers on there, so that's great. I want to continue to rise up. I want to continue to just keep blasting podcasts out and continue this podcast going. It's my baby, guys. All right, so thank you very much, guys, for listening once again. You know, I got this new drop too. It's Jude. He's just saying Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Yeah. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Ala Madrid. Anyway, not to be annoying. Anyway, so that's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. And I will talk to you all again soon. We're going to have a break for a little bit. And so obviously for international break. And then we will be back mid-September, September 14th, of course, for that Real Sociedad versus Real Madrid game. Another tough one at the Real Arena. But I think we're going to come back even stronger with Mbappe. Hopefully Jude Bellingham and all these guys are back fit when we come back from that international break. All right, guys. So thank you very much for listening. I'll talk to you again soon.
This has been Y Nada Más, al Real Madrid Podcast.